The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Trumpet Daily. I'm Sam Livingston. I will be your guest host on today's 4th of July Trumpet Daily program. Happy 4th of July, by the way, to everyone, except Democrats who despise this day, unfortunately celebrating the birth of America. The Declaration of Independence is, you guessed it, racist, divisive, controversial. This was an official post from the Democratic Party of Pima County, Arizona. This is the official or unofficial Democratic Party. They are organizing a women's march for the 4th of July, and their pamphlet says, let's mourn with expletive the 4th. So this is a time to mourn. They curse the 4th of July, and this was to promote a women's march, which apparently are women's rights, as they see it, are incompatible with celebrating the 4th of July. It's impossible to make sense of the radicals' thought process, their logic, but at any rate, that is their viewpoint. They took that post down, by the way. There was severe backlash, but that's the way these people think, and whether they say it explicitly, you know, based on their actions, that they hate the United States of America. They are attacking the United States. This country is going through severe tests and trials. If you have any comments for today's show, if you have any feedback, you can send those comments to td@thetrumpet.com. You can watch our show live each weekday at 11 a.m. Central Time. You can watch the video on or at our website, thetrumpet.com/live. You can listen to the program live at CRN. You can download the podcast, listen to it anytime you like. We're available on most any podcast apps. If you want any of the literature on today's show, and I'll be plugging the New America Under Attack book quite a bit on today's show, you can call our number 1-866-930-3024. That's toll free throughout most of North America. Again, that number is 1-866-930-3024. Like I said, the United States is more divided than ever. We're approaching a civil war, as a lot of commentators are even noting. And you've got the great unifier, Joe Biden. Remember his inauguration? All of the talking heads in the news couldn't stop praising him for how well he brings Congress together, and that he does because the Republicans are so weak and they're so quick to compromise with the truth. Joe Biden tweeted, I highly doubt he actually tweeted this. This comes from his Twitter account. Considering he's struggling to speak with the teleprompter, considering he's struggling to speak in general, I highly doubt he actually has a phone or computer and types up these posts himself. He wrote, or someone wrote for him, under my plan for the economy, we've made extraordinary progress. We've put America in a position to tackle the worldwide problem of inflation from a place of strength. The problem is Republicans in Congress are doing everything they can to stop my plans to bring down costs. Now, he's someone that picked on Donald Trump for not taking the blame for things. He said, well, the buck has to stop with the president. This man cannot take blame for any problem. I mean, if it's not Putin, it's Republicans. And if it's not Republicans, it's ordinary Americans, like he says in this and another post he had yesterday. This is to do with gas prices. My message to the companies running gas stations and setting prices at the pump is simple. This is a time of war and global peril. Bring down the price you are charging at the pump to reflect the cost you're paying for the product, and do it now. It's those ma and pa gas station owners that are exploiting you American citizens at the gas pump. They're pumping up the gas prices, $2-3, and if they weren't so greedy, they could just remove that and gas would go back to being $1.50. It's not Vladimir Putin's fault anymore. It's not my policies. It's the Ma and Pa gas station owners. If only they would stop exploiting the American public. Even billionaire Jeff Bezos, who is far left, responded to that message. He said, "Ouch. Inflation is far too important a problem for the White House to keep making statements like this. It's either straight-ahead misdirection or a deep misunderstanding of basic market dynamics." So his solution, blame everyone else, further divide the country. And as we'll see in this program, that's all part of the plan. Divide the United States, create chaos. This is not incompetence. It is part of their policy, part of their plan. The Wall Street Journal, this was their headline on July 1st. Biden seeks to block new offshore drilling in Atlantic and Pacific. The Biden administration plans to block new offshore drilling in the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans while allowing limited expansion in the Gulf of Mexico and Alaska's south coast. The proposal released by the Interior Department on Friday evening would allow as many as 11 oil lease sales for offshore drilling over the course of 5 years. But the plan is still being developed and gives the administration several options, including one that would forgo new lease sales entirely, according to the Interior Department. Ultimately, a final decision is months away. Now, you know, if this was Donald Trump, he would be saying, drill, drill, drill. Get rid of all of those restrictions. Get rid of the carbon restrictions. There's a war, as Biden says. And here's a very quick solution to hurt Vladimir Putin because the sanctions aren't doing it. The ruble is stronger than ever. If you look at the chart, Russia is selling more oil than they did before the invasion because China, India are buying more of it. I think Turkey is another one that has increased their purchase of Russian oil. So you have those kings of the East taking shape. And here Joe Biden is saying, well, we have to do anything we can, whatever it takes, except trying to bring down the price of oil, which would actually mean Vladimir Putin makes less money, makes the war more expensive for him, and he won't turn on the pumps. We've got the environment, we've got emission standards we have to meet. This is a deliberate attack on the United States. I saw a meme that was talking about the drug ivermectin, and when it came to COVID, you know, you couldn't talk about ivermectin. You were canceled for that. You were kicked off of Twitter. You were a conspiracy theorist for suggesting that that would work. And that the reason that was because, well, the administration needed you to go through this crisis. We won't give you that solution because we need you to go through this crisis. And they were making the point that, well, that's the same thing with domestically produced oil. We could solve this problem, but we need you to go through this crisis. We need this crisis. What's happening to the United States of America? Many people are asking that question, as I'll get to in just a few minutes. This book, America Under Attack, answers those questions. And I've never read so many commentators really, they're getting so close to answering some of these questions, but they're missing that fundamental piece of the puzzle. I mean, if you were to suggest 10 years ago that the United States was being attacked by the people in charge, by its leaders, people would scoff at you. But now a lot of commentators are saying that this makes no sense unless they are attacking the United States, unless they hate the United States. And people didn't see that with Barack Obama. But you look at the trumpet, you look at what Mr. Gerald Flurry was writing in 2006, 2007 about Nancy Pelosi, the rise of radicalism, the rise of communism, and its takeover of the Democratic Party. Said it's an attack from within. Many people are asking questions. This clip was circulating over the weekend. This is a clip of a veteran. He's 100 years old, so I assume he fought in World War II, considering his age, and he's crying about the state of America. This isn't the country that we fought for. And he has some great lessons in his interview. I assume they're interviewing him because he's 100 years old now, and he starts talking about the state of America and how sad he is. And pay close attention to the conclusion of this clip, because this world doesn't have hope apart from what you will read in America Under Attack, apart from what you'll read in your Bible. This is clip number two.
I've lived a good life. I mean, I've had a lot of happiness, smiling, telling everybody that everything was beautiful every day. If I went into my church and didn't say everything was beautiful, they'd think I was sick. And I'm not that way. I mean, I sincerely believe in this old world that everything is beautiful. I mean, if I wake up in the morning and see these plants out here and all those flowers that are in there and the green grass on the ground, that's beautiful. And people don't realize what they have. They think about it. And then nowadays, I am so upset that the things we did and the things we fought for and the boys that died for it, it's all gone down the drain. Our country's gone down in a handbasket. We haven't got the country we had when I was raised. Not at all. Nobody will have the fun I had. Nobody will have the opportunity I had. It's just not the same. That's not what our boys, that's not what they died for. It's just not it. I'm so sorry. I'll be all right. Just takes me time to get over it. Why me sitting here like this? See, all this going on.
It's crazy.
Emily, it's just not the same. That isn't what we fought for. Oh well.
The start of that clip, how thankful he is, how grateful he is for all of the little things. If I could wake up and I can see the green grass and I can see the flowers blooming, I'm thankful. A lot of people don't have those things. And he looks for all the little things in life and he says, people won't have the opportunities I had. And I don't think a lot of people would look at that. That's a rough life that he would have lived, being born, I assume, in 1922. Growing up, my grandpa's from that generation. He's dead now, but they had dirt floors. It was rough, and then you're 17 or 18, and they put you on a boat, and they send you to the Pacific, say you storm that beach. Just teenagers, 17 or 18, and he says, I had opportunities in my life. And he says, I'm thankful to just see the flowers blooming each morning, and these people are so ungrateful. They're so unthankful for what they've been given. The greatest nation on earth. Blessings abound. I mean, this country is being cursed, no doubt. But the way that we live, we are still tremendously blessed. And I remember my dad growing up, it wasn't like we lived in a huge house by any means. But he always said, you live in a palace compared to the way the rest of the world lives, compared to the way humanity has lived throughout history. You live in a palace. And there was always a huge emphasis on being grateful, being thankful. And this 4th of July, why is it so controversial to just say, I'm thankful for the blessings that we have been giving? I didn't do anything to deserve it. I didn't fight in any war. How come the Democrats can't make that admission? But he is looking at this country and is lamenting and is asking questions that, frankly, every person on this planet should be asking. What's happening to the United States? And those are the questions that Mr. Fleury asks in this book. And the saddest part of that clip is he can't really contain himself. He doesn't know where he's going, and he just kind of ends and says, oh, well, that's the end of the United States. Just like the Roman Empire, just like all of the other empires throughout history, they live and die. What is the United States' place in Bible prophecy? What is happening to our nations? I'll read a quote here in a little bit. Abraham Lincoln, America is the last best hope for the world. What happens when this country dies? This is a quote from America Under Attack. America's Constitution makes this nation different from any other in the world. It is based on biblical principles. The protections afforded by the Constitution have allowed God to bless this nation tremendously. They prevent a dictator from seizing control of the nation's unmatched resources, resources God gave us. The Constitution was one of many blessings that made America the greatest nation in history. God has blessed America like no other nation, and the devil wants to destroy America like no other nation. Satan is marshaling every weapon he can to wreck America, and he is having alarming success. Again, Bible prophecy supplies crucial insight into why. And this is where people don't want to go. They're sad about the United States. They're upset by what's happening. But will they look to God? Will they ask, what do I need to change? What do I need to do differently? I mean, if you say Bible prophecy, you'll be mocked. But this is the last, this is the only hope for this country. A couple days ago, there was this headline about a bust of Abraham Lincoln and a plaque of the Gettysburg Address being removed from Cornell University. Someone complained about it. Someone said, they don't even say what the complaint was. It was all done in the middle of the night, someone complained about it, and then one of the professors at the university noticed that it wasn't there, and he asked the librarian, and she just said there was a complaint and we had to remove it. Now, Mr. Fleury, he's talked about Abraham Lincoln specifically and the Gettysburg Address in a message not that long ago, and then the timing of this, you see Abraham Lincoln being canceled, and he's not one of the founding fathers, but arguably one of America's greatest presidents. The professor who noticed that that bust was gone, this is from Fox News, his last name is Wayne. Wayne said he believes no one has the whole story at this time about the removed display and emphasized the importance the Gettysburg Address has for him and his students. When I take my students to this library center each semester, I have one of them read the original Gettysburg Address in Lincoln's hand. I am in tears each time I hear a student read those words. That is a rare comment to hear from a professor, a university professor at an Ivy League school. A lot of Americans are troubled by the trajectory of this nation. A lot of people are wondering, why is America under attack and what is going to happen? This is from the intro of that book. Mr. Fleury writes, across the globe, people are asking the same question. What has happened to the United States of America? In just a few short years, the wealthiest, most powerful, most influential single nation in human history has become dangerously radicalized, divided, and weak. It has rapidly fallen into political dysfunction, social division, economic woe, judicial and legislative compromise, and catastrophic moral failure. The nation Abraham Lincoln called the last best hope of earth is, as he warned, about to die by suicide. Why? Why is the nation, with every historic, geographical, cultural, economic, and military advantage, destroying itself? This book, unlike any other, will reveal the core reason. It is totally unseen by most people in America and around the world. This nation is committing suicide at the hands of certain powerful people in government and in society. They are actively, intentionally sabotaging this special nation from the inside. These radical elites have rapidly and fundamentally transformed American politics, governance, diplomacy, policy, morality, race, sex, tradition, and culture. This is what makes America's collapse so shocking, so historic, and so excruciating. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. How can you explain this? You need to know. Again, request America Under Attack. Read it online right now. It's being printed at the publisher. It won't be available for a physical request for another month or so. But get ahead of that. Read that book. It asks those questions. It asks the questions that veteran is asking. And it provides the answers. If you're open-minded and if you're honest with yourself about what the Bible says about the United States, about Britain, about the nation of modern Israel, I thought, again, like I mentioned at the start, there's commentators taking note of what's happening in the United States. And I read quite a few conservative blogs, I guess if you call them. This one is from a lawyer named Travis Miller, and his article is titled, "The Greatest Threat to Democracy is from Our Elected Representatives." Again, headlines that you wouldn't read 5 to 10 years ago, but it's so apparent and it's so obvious, and you need to understand why. Miller writes, "Forget January 6th. The biggest threat this country faces is from the elected officials in Washington, D.C. Federal policies have caused inflation to hit a 40-year high of 8.6%, or using Carter-era calculations, 16%. And I suspect it's even higher than that. They know how to mess with the formula to make it less than it actually is. But if you look at what we're paying for certain products, it's not 8% more. I think, remember last 4th of July, the Biden administration, they published that video bragging about how a 4th of July meal is going to be 16 cents cheaper than it was the year before, because this is the Biden boom. Everyone's so excited that the economy is being restored. That meal is 16 cents cheaper. Well, there's no video like that this weekend. There's no video like that today, because the average meal is $9 to $10 more. That's incredible. That's more than 16% when you look at the price of beef, when you look at just other staple items, other staple food items. Obviously, gas is much more than 16%. He goes through listing all of these, all of the things that are costing 30% more. Energy prices, eggs, 30% more. Gas is up over 50%. That's just year over year. So this is just going back to Biden's first year. If you go back to 2020, it's over 100% for things like gas. Overall, Miller writes, the typical U.S. household is spending about $460 more every month than they did last year to purchase the same basket of goods and services. That's a penalty of at least $5,520 per year for the average American household. Wasn't that stimulus check worth it? Wasn't it worth it to get that little boost of income? And now, how long are you going to be paying that off? I mean, it's not going to go back. I mean, there will be a crash before it gets any better. Miller writes, what does the Biden administration say about rising costs? That's just the price Americans must pay for the future of the liberal world order. The revolution will always have its victims. Joe Biden has decided America is at war. The world is in peril. You have to pay the cost. You have to suffer to fight my war. He says, meanwhile, your 401k and investments are getting decimated, with the stock market closing out its worst six-month stretch to start a year since 1970. The NASDAQ composite is down 22.4% for year second quarter, its worst stretch since 2008. The bubble they created must eventually pop. I have an article later in my notes that talks about a lot of these startup companies, I call them millennial startups, guys in their 20s and 30s, things like those food delivery services, Uber, all of these convenient things that were very cheap for a little while, and now people are noticing they're getting very expensive. I used to be able to pay $5 for that Uber to come pick me up, and now it's costing $50. Well, what's happening? Well, when the interest rates start rising again, and it's not free to borrow money, you have to actually start turning a profit. Gas is getting more expensive. All of those things that were being essentially subsidized cannot operate anymore. You have to turn a profit. So now these big startup companies that you heard a lot about over the last 3-4 years are really feeling the pinch, and people are getting a reality check. Miller writes, it's the threat created by the very politicians lecturing us about the existential threat of January 6th, the future of insolvency, the possibility that our children will be enslaved to someone else's debt. He writes about how high the U.S. or the ratio of debt to gross domestic product is. He says that by 2052, this country's debt will be 185% of GDP. Then he quotes someone from the Peterson Foundation. They write, according to the Congressional Budget Office's projections, interest payments would total around $66 trillion over the next 30 years and would take up nearly 40% of all federal revenues by 2052. Interest costs would also become the largest program over the next few decades, surpassing defense spending in 2029. Now, Andrew Miller, a different Miller, writes at the Trumpet, and he's quoting, you can read this, I think it's two Trumpet magazines ago, his article about the economy, and Niall Ferguson writes that traditionally these nations crumble when their interest payments exceed what they spend on defense. So the amount of money that we are paying to borrow money, not even what we're spending the borrowed money on, what we pay to use that money exceeds the defense budget, which I think is somewhere around $700 billion annually. And that, he says, at this current rate, that will exceed that in 2029, 6 or 7 years down the road. Then he goes on to talk about the downfall of American cities. Over in progressive occupied San Francisco, there have been 1,360 drug overdose fatalities, more than double the total COVID-19 death toll there. And you just had that election, or that recall election where the radical prosecutor who wouldn't go after crime has been recalled. Doesn't mean anything because the mayor is just as radical, so she'll get to appoint someone. But you see people getting upset about the liberal world order, as that one commentator said it, or the new world order, as they're talking about. Miller writes, these problems, which are financial and criminal and cultural, threaten the livelihood and lives of millions of Americans. They are this country's top priority. They demand action and fiscal sanity from Congress. They require introspection from our elected officials as our imploding and fractured nation implicates their malfeasance. But please give us more hearings on January 6th. Why aren't these problems front and center? He says, well, Congress should be addressing it. The media should be talking about it more. But is that really what's going to solve these problems? See, they see that America is under attack. They see it's under attack from its own elected representatives, as he writes. But what are they trying to do? What's motivating them? Why would somebody want to destroy the country that they live in? Barack Obama has some very nice mansions in the United States of America, on Martha's Vineyard, in Hawaii, in Chicago. Why would he want to destroy this prosperous country? Does he not enjoy those blessings? Does he not enjoy those things? It is a satanic attack. It's beyond logic, and you have to understand what's written in America under attack. You have to understand what the Bible says about the devil's hatred for this country and what motivates that hatred. Well, speaking of January 6th, we have to comment on it because that's all the media will talk about. That's what they want to fill your news feed with. Not these big problems like inflation, like the rampant crime, like the recession that we're in right now. Instead, it's this explosive interview with Cassidy Hutchinson. Well, Adam Kinzinger, he had quite the gaffe over the weekend. One of these CNN political commentators was talking about the Secret Service agent, Tony Ornato. And Ornato is the one who told Cassidy Hutchinson, allegedly, this is what happened in The Beast. It wasn't The Beast. Never mind that. Donald Trump lunged for the steering wheel, tried to choke the other Secret Service agent, Robert Ingalls, who tried to stop him. We've talked about this before. Super Trump with his hand on the wheel and strangling the Secret Service agent, trying to get them to drive to the Capitol. And, he orchestrated this great coup, made sure that there were armed protesters there, and then forgot to make sure that the driver was a loyalist. So the whole plan failed. All of that time and planning and that effort that went into trying to take over the Capitol, and President Trump forgot to make sure that the driver was on his side. So they had to go back to the West Wing. There was no coup. The entire plan was thwarted. Apparently, that's what they want you to believe. Adam Kinzinger, in response to this post from a CNN commentator. This commentator happens to be the liaison between Cassidy Hutchison and Liz Cheney. So Cassidy learns or meets Liz Cheney because of this analyst. I forgot her name in there. Anyway, Kinzinger responds to that post, says, "There seems to be a major thread here. Tony Ornato likes to lie." Whoa. Kinzinger, hold the phone. American public here, we'd like to know. Cassidy Hutchison, where's the clip? Could you play clip 4 really quick? This is from Cassidy.
When Mr. Ornato had recounted this story to me, he had motioned towards his clavicles.
Mr. Ornato recounted the story to me. So Cassidy's bombshell hearing or testimony is based on a story secondhand that she heard from Tony Ornato. But then Kinzinger now says, Tony Ornato likes to lie. Okay. So is he lying to Cassidy and Cassidy, the whole thing didn't happen? Or maybe he told that to Cassidy and now he's lying about it? At any rate, what is Kinzinger doing stepping into this? He's supposed to be, it's a hearing. In theory, he's supposed to be an impartial judge. That never happens. But now, you know, if Ornato comes before them, you're not getting a fair trial. Everybody knew that. But it highlights what a charade these hearings are. So Ornato likes to lie. We're going back and forth. All we can hear about over the weekend and over the last week or two is Cassidy and how unhinged Donald Trump is. And they're just behaving like little children. And like I said, it's annoying to even spend time on this, but you have to look at the power that they wield right now, because the FBI is and Merrick Garland are colluding with this committee. So who they're targeting and who they're talking about might just be the next person to have the FBI show up at their house at 6 a.m., parade them out in their pajamas, take their cell phone, and take their laptop. And they might even spend the next couple years in jail awaiting trial, because that's the new standard of justice in the United States. Now, CNN, very excited, found some more Secret Service agents who corroborate Cassidy Hutchison's story based on Tony Ornato's story, who Adam Kinzinger says is a liar. And this is CNN with another bombshell. Go ahead and play clip 1.
Two Secret Service sources have just confirmed to CNN that Donald Trump did angrily demand to be taken to the U.S. Capitol as rioters, may I say armed rioters, approached Capitol Hill, and he berated his protective detail when he did not get his way.
So this is significant because it corroborates some of the testimony from Cassidy Hutchison on Tuesday, which Trump and his allies have been trying to discredit.
The president reached up towards the front of the vehicle to grab at the steering wheel. Mr. Engel grabbed his arm, said, "Sir, you need to take your hand off the steering wheel. We're going back to the West Wing. We're not going to the Capitol." Mr. Trump then used his free hand to lunge towards Bobby Engel. And when Mr. Ornato had recounted this story to me, he had motioned towards his clavicles.
All right, let's start with the new reporting. CNN congressional correspondent Ryan Nobles has it. What are you learning?
Yeah, that's right, Victor. This comes from two different sources within the Secret Service who spoke to our Noah Gray, who said that this story of the former president being irate and demanding to be taken to the Capitol on the day of January 6th was something that was spread around the Secret Service in the weeks, months, and days after what happened on January 6th. Some recounting this story as early as February. And the two different sources have stories that are very similar to the one that Cassidy Hutchison testified to in the hearing on Tuesday, saying that the president was mad and that he lunged toward the steering wheel in an effort to try and get the detail to take him to Capitol Hill. And what's also important is that second source that we spoke to said that they had heard the story directly from the driver of the presidential Suburban that Trump was in on that day. Now, both of these sources never said that the stories that they heard indicated that there was any type of physical altercation or that the president himself ever was able to grab hold of the steering wheel. It's important to point out that Hutchison never makes that direct claim either, just saying that he was lunging in that direction. But what it does more than anything is it corroborates the most important part of this story, that the president was angry and that he was demanding that he be taken to the Capitol, where he had already encouraged a group of rioters who he knew were armed to go to the Capitol and be a part of that. And that's the thing that the committee is most concerned about. It's also important to point out, Victor and Allison, that when the Secret Service has pushed back on that testimony, when they've refuted parts of it, they've never disputed the idea that Trump was mad and that he wanted to go back to the Capitol. Of course, the other aspect of this is that the Secret Service has said that Tony Ornato and Bobby Engel, the two agents in question involved in this, are willing to come back and testify under oath. So far, we don't know if those depositions have been scheduled.
What a clown show. What is going on here? Let's just break down a few aspects of that clip. This Cassidy brought the big bombshell that Donald Trump assaulted a member of the Secret Service, that he tried to take over the Suburban, and he was single-handedly, literally single-handedly, without his foot on the pedal, going to drive that Suburban to the Capitol, lead the protesters with AR-15s into the Capitol, apparently going to, I don't know, assassinate Mike Pence, then take all of the fake electors from the swing states and declare himself president. Apparently that was the plan, according to CNN. Then that's the big bombshell for a whole week. Oh, now we've got two more Secret Service agents to corroborate parts of Cassidy's testimony. That Trump did angrily demand to be taken to the U.S. Capitol. Then the bit where he says, well, it's important to point out that Cassidy never said President Trump actually had his hand on the wheel. Go ahead and play clip three.
Mr. Engel grabbed his arm, said, sir, you need to take your hand off the steering wheel.
Sir, you need to take your hand off the steering wheel. That would imply his hand was on the steering wheel. CNN played that clip in the soundbite we just played, so they're not even listening to their star witness. Then, well, the Secret Service agents, the lunging thing might have been a little poetic license, even the strangling of the clavicles, maybe a little poetic license. There was, maybe the president was a bit angry. That analyst says, these agents, what they said to us corroborates the most important part of the story, that the president was angry and that he was demanding. So we went from assaulting a Secret Service agent to, the president was upset and he was demanding. So he needs to be indicted. We have to prosecute him. Get Merrick Garland and the FBI to show up at Trump Tower or Mar-a-Lago and arrest the president. They've never disputed the idea that Trump was mad and that he wanted to go back to the Capitol. I watched that entire thing, as many of you probably did, on January 6, 2021. I watched it in the weeks up to it. My impression the entire time was that Donald Trump wanted to go to the Capitol. You know why that was my impression? Because they kept saying that was the plan. There's no bombshell in President Trump wanted to go to the Capitol. Of course he was mad that they didn't take him. What person wouldn't be mad if their subordinates disobeyed an order? He's the president of the United States. He wanted to go to the Capitol, and probably, you know what, there wouldn't have been the violence that there was had he actually been taken to the Capitol. You know why? Because I highly doubt that Capitol Hill police would start lobbing flashbang grenades into a crowd where the president of the United States is. And you know when that violence broke out? I'm working on a video of this. Is in when Ray Epps whispers in the ear of Ryan Samsel and says, who knows what? Right after that, Samsel goes and starts violently assaulting the police officers. That's the first instance of violence on that day. And you know who loves Ray Epps? Adam Kinzinger. Ray Epps was just a good law-abiding protester. He never entered the Capitol. We've covered it before. If someone is on video inciting a riot, it's Ray Epps. And that committee does not care. January 6th is a cover-up for exposing the election. But this is what they put the American public through. The most important part was that President Trump was angry and demanding. I think anybody is going to get a little bit angry reading this nonsense. Anybody is going to get a little bit angry when the elected leaders of the United States, rather than talking about inflation, rather than talking about how the United States is out of control, rather than talking about the opioid epidemic, the hundreds of thousands of people dying from drug overdoses, rather than talking about rampant crime, they're talking about he said, she said, this happened in the limo, President Trump assaulted a Secret Service agent. That was a little overblown, but he was angry. We assure you, he was angry. And people are paying $500 more a month for basic goods than they were just a year ago, $6,000 more a year. And these are the elected representatives of the United States. This is the mainstream media. Andrew McCarthy seems like he's finally coming around again. He was very excited to jump on board with the whole Cassidy Hutchinson thing. And he talks about Kinzinger. Why would you get on Twitter and clearly display your bias against one of the actual witnesses there? So now if he does reappear before the committee, no one is going to believe he's getting a fair trial because you don't have the, well, it's a kangaroo court. When you're not getting representation, you don't have defense lawyers, when you don't have Republicans actually there to just counter some of these claims. Now the goal, and this is what's important, is that they're going after President Trump. Again, Andrew McCarthy seems to really be getting a lot of praise from the left wing these days, because this is the first time I think I've ever noticed one of his articles getting published in the Washington Post. And his article is titled, "Prosecuting Trump Could Do More Harm Than Good." So he's kind of all in that, yeah, because President Trump incited the riot, because he knew they were armed, because he assaulted a Secret Service agent, blah, 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 he should be indicted. But we really need to be more circumspect about this. Is it really wise to do that? Is it maybe it's not wise for Joe Biden's Justice Department to try to indict his primary political opponent? That might look a bit like a banana republic, kind of like what they do in communist countries. So it's going to cause more division. It's going to cause more anger if you go ahead and do that. Now, that, when you consider the goal of Biden and Obama, they want to divide the country. How divisive would it be to indict Donald Trump? They're trying to make people angry. They're trying to incite violence because they want to use that as a pretext to grab the guns, to put people in jail, to imprison them, to arrest them. And all of this, again, is distracting from that election steal. Mr. Fleury writes in America Under Attack, "Evidence of the devil's success is all around us. That is the real story of the political, social, and moral transformation of America. Satan has been influencing the minds of the elites in particular, increasingly steering policy and shaping public discourse. The mainstream media have been overcome by the devil. This has influenced millions of people. Never has anything like this happened before. Never have Americans seen such a satanic aberration in their presidential politics." 2 Corinthians 11, verse 14 reveals that Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. He is skilled at deceit and intimidation, and he is using these powers to conquer this nation. That is what the Michael Hastings example is all about. Hastings is a reporter that talks about how the media swooned over Barack Obama. Mr. Fleury says, "By Mr. Obama's second term, Satan had all the mainstream media swooning. The reporters swooned as the devil took control of this country. This book, America Under Attack, tells the full story of how Satan has gotten a stranglehold on America." If you're like that veteran we played at the top of the show, if you're anyone wondering what's happening to the United States, read America Under Attack. Like I noted, the goal of these committees, we've said it on this show, it's impeachment 3.0, is Donald Trump. And Andrew McCarthy, he published this article just hours before the Cassidy Hutchinson testimony or hearing. And it's about John Eastman, it's about Jeffrey Clark, and how they were arrested. His article is titled, "The Stealth Inspector General Investigation of Donald Trump." Now, he notes how unusual it is that the Department of Justice would issue warrants and actually show up to these men's homes and confiscate their property, because they're not, you know, just Joe Schmo Americans where, you know, I don't have money to have a lawyer on staff all the time. These guys are lawyers, and they have lawyers representing them. So McCarthy makes the point that when that's the case, if you're doing an investigation and these people aren't accused of any crimes, but you're trying to build a case, but you need those pieces of technology or whatever, you issue a subpoena. It's not to go after that man in particular, because we don't have evidence yet that there was a crime, but we need to confiscate his phone. So what you would do is you would get a judge to sign off on that search warrant. Then you would hand it to the person's counsel or their lawyers. Their lawyers would tell them, hey, you have to hand this over, or they're actually going to come physically confiscate it from you. That luxury was never awarded to these men. And what McCarthy points out here is this is not the usual FBI investigation. The agents that raided Jeffrey Clark's home and John Eastman, who followed him to a restaurant when he was with his wife, took his phone illegally, they are members of the Department of Justice Inspector General's department. So what that means is these agents do internal investigations. And that gives them a whole different set of rules that agents would normally have to abide by. So their job is, if there's a problem within the DOJ, if there is crime, if there is some scandal, they go and investigate. And what McCarthy points out here is, well, Clark is the only one that was an employee for the Department of Justice, and he's been out for a year. John Eastman never was employed by the DOJ. He was a lawyer for Donald Trump. So he's trying to get to, well, what are they investigating here? What is the crime? And it sounds like, rather than opening up an FBI investigation similar to what the FBI did for Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, they're treating this as an internal investigation and going after these former employees in the hopes that grabbing their phones, getting their laptops and their emails will lead them to Donald Trump. McCarthy writes, the Justice Department's Inspector General has no authority to conduct such an investigation. To repeat, the Inspector General is confined to probing misconduct by the Justice Department employees. That undermines Justice Department programs. It is not the Inspector General's mission to investigate, much less obtain search warrants to probe, such felony federal violations as obstruction of Congress and seditious conspiracy. So they're accusing these men of, well, seditious conspiracy. You're trying to overthrow the government, but they're not having the regular FBI. They're not opening a formal investigation. McCarthy says, moreover, the IG has no jurisdiction to investigate Eastman. As the Department of Justice IG Michael Horowitz explained in opening, with great fanfare, an investigation into whether DOJ employees improperly sought to overturn the 2020 election, the IG's jurisdiction does not even extend to government officials who are not former or current DOJ officials. So Horowitz, you remember a couple years ago, he's the one that wrote that report about the FISA abuse, and he's one of Obama's appointees, so it was clearly a biased report. But he said, I don't have the power to compel witnesses. I don't have the power to compel people to turn over their cell phones. That was, I think, I don't have the quote here, but I think that was in the report. Hey, I just gathered what I could, what was available. I couldn't compel anyone to testify. All of the interviews I conducted, they weren't under oath. They weren't risking perjuring themselves, because we're not, you know, actual agents. It's an internal review. But now, that same IG under Merrick Garland, I think Horowitz is still in there, they're showing up at people's doorsteps. And what are you going to do? Are you going to, you know, call the police and say, hey, the fake FBI is here and they don't have any right to actually do what they're doing? I need the police to come over so I can plead my case. No, it's going to go into a court. And then you're wound up with all of these legal fees and all of this time to explain to the court, they didn't have the authority to do this. But that's the point. The process is the punishment. Now, the goal of all of this, as we've said, is to get to Donald Trump. The rumor is from the New York Times that he might announce his 2024 campaign sometime this month. I think he obviously wants to shift the media's attention away from those hearings. And then we've had quite a few victories for that conservative movement in the Supreme Court, Jeroboam's court, as again, this book explains, and a lot of Mr. Flurry's articles have explained how that court has worked in his favor and been one of the lasting achievements of Donald Trump. This is from the Washington Free Beacon. It's titled Supreme Court Poised to End Left-Wing Election Shenanigans. And it talks about how in the lead up to 2020, you had unelected election officials. For example, in Wisconsin, you just had these appointed bureaucrats that are supposed to just handle logistics for the election. They actually changed the rules because of COVID. It's always because of COVID. And started telling people, yeah, it's okay to vote in drop boxes, when drop boxes were never legalized by the state legislature. And the Constitution explicitly states that election laws are supposed to be handled by the state legislators. So people like these election commission officials were changing the rules. Then those rules would get challenged by Republicans. Then it would make it up to the state Supreme Courts, for example, in Pennsylvania. Those courts are all leaned Democrat. So they would just side with the election officials, and the state legislators were completely sidelined in the process. And now the Supreme Court has taken up a case out of North Carolina that would address that issue, that would restore the election process back to the way the Constitution says it should be handled, which is by the state legislators. If they don't change that rule, you can't just on a whim decide it's going to be what you feel it needs to be at the time. And we know that that opened the floodgates for mail-in ballots. Millions of ballots being sent out to who knows where, being collected by Democrat operatives, being handed out to mules to put in the drop boxes, to insert into the counts. And there's no way to track them because they're real ballots that were actually printed by the governments of these states. So the Supreme Court, they were too cowardly to take up that case leading up to 2020 and in the months preceding it, but now they want to do it. They all know, they all see it. I'll just conclude here with one final quote from America Under Attack. Mr. Flurry says, "With no helper for Israel, many terrible things are going to occur. Already, other nations are betraying America, as well as its brother nations, Britain and Israel. Iran is developing nuclear weapons. It is seeking ways to humiliate the United States. China is becoming more belligerent. It is targeting U.S. allies like Australia, Hong Kong, and Taiwan, while drawing closer to America's enemies, holding drills with Iran and backing Cuba. Europe is increasingly determined to become more independent from America and is expanding trade with China. Germany has pursued alignment with Russia through the Nord Stream 2 pipeline and other means. As God prophesied, our national lovers are going to betray us and besiege us. America will be left without a single helper. People are looking to Republicans, to conservative commentators, and to preachers for hope. The reality is there is no hope without God. Satan is working to blot out the name of Israel. The good news is God has a master plan to save Israel permanently, and he is carrying it out. With God, there is endless hope. The world around us is about to die. Bible prophecy shows that it will end in a terribly violent and tragic way, but it will be replaced by a wonderful new world ruled by Jesus Christ. Once that world is here, never again will you hear words, there was no helper for Israel, because all people will be Israel and be in the family of God. What an inspiring hope." And that is the hope contained within America Under Attack. That is the hope that that veteran needs. That is the hope that every person in this world needs. Well, thank you for listening to today's show. If you have any comments or feedback, you can send those to td@thetrumpet.com. You can call us 1-866-930-3024. I hope you have a wonderful 4th of July, and we'll see you again tomorrow.